All right.
All right, 9 o'clock. Call to order. Angie, want to do the roll call?
Again, 9 o'clock. It's January 9th, Tuesday, 2004. Let's start that all over again. Tuesday, January 9th, 2024, 9:02. Brent Woods.
Here.
Rick Bright.
Here.
Dennis Kuhn.
Here.
Fred Knapp.
Here.
Jeff Hamstra.
Here.
Ken Cawthorn. Dante. Dante's not coming. Okay. We have quorum.
And do we just want to have the staff introduce themselves, or do you have a sign-up sheet? Okay, want to do the staff and guests.
Do you want everybody to introduce themselves?
Well, probably, yeah.
And I can start. Clayton Trevilian, City of Tucson, Planning and Development Services.
Rick Hollander, IEI.
David Laws, Permanent Manager, Town of Ore Valley.
Fernanda Quintanilla with Diamond Ventures.
Priscilla Storm with Diamond Ventures.
Dan Ice, Pima County Development Services.
Mark Mastic, City of Tucson, Development Services.
I'm Dennis Kuhn, Committee Member.
Jeff Hamster, Committee Member.
Fred Knapp, Committee Member.
Rick Bryan, Committee Member.
Philip O'Connor, Plans Examiner, Town of Ore Valley.
Bob Sherry, City of Tucson, Planning Development Services.
Angie Reese, City of Tucson Planning and Development Services.
Brent Woods, Committee.
Thank you all for being here.
Okay, so I'm moving on to item number 2, International Mechanical Code 2021 and 2024. What do you got?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
One committee member we really need here for this is not in attendance. Is Ken Cawthorn? Did he say he would be here?
His books are here.
I'm wondering if we should do other, if we could do other agenda items waiting for Ken to come, because he should really be here for the mechanical
and the plumbing.
Yeah, that's his.
And probably the fuel, and probably the fuel gas.
Yeah, fuel gas.
And the plumbing.
Yeah.
Well, let's find out what the question, what the issues are first. In
Ken is frequently late to meetings.
That's fine. Let's just do a quick recap of where we are, where we're going.
Another option is to skip to the non-code-related items of the agenda. The city clerk's office has requested that all boards and committees discuss if they wish to do hybrid meetings in the future. So that could be discussed.
All right,
potentially waiting for Ken.
Okay, Ken is on his way. We just had confirmation. Let's jump to 5 for the moment and discuss if we want to do hybrid or in person only. Just a quick straw poll of the committee members, just to get a feel for where we're at.
What do you mean by hybrid?
From your
Zoom
office.
Zoom plus or in person only. What's your gut feel? Either? Or do you have a feeling one way or another?
So I'm on one other committee and they do it hybrid, and it's sometimes a bit hiccupy with committee members being able to jump in when they want to come in. I usually attend in person.
Okay. Jeff?
But
I'm old school, so I'm a little more in person.
I agree.
Okay. In person, definitely.
Okay, and I'm an in person too, because it makes it so much easier to discuss things, and if there's documentation that needs to be handed out.
Computer safety.
Can I get a motion?
I move that we have in person meetings only.
Second.
Any further discussion?
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it important to allow the public to have access to these discussions? If that's the case, then certainly like hybrid, it allows more opportunities for impacted stakeholders to at least listen and observe the proceedings.
Well, until COVID, pre-COVID, we were in person only for decades, and it worked just fine. So I think that the notifications are in place, and if it's important, they can show up.
I don't think it's hard to just put a Zoom link in and have it on during the meeting so people can listen. There's an option.
So I guess the question is, in person for the committee members,
right.
Make it available on Zoom?
Is that technically?
I think with the outdoor light code, a lot of the Zoom meetings were only because we had members that needed to join in order for us to have quorum via Zoom. Otherwise, they probably would have also been in person.
Okay. So I guess the question is, if we've agreed to meet in person only. Is there a technical or other problem just making that available on Zoom for viewing only?
No, again, those of you that have experienced it, there can be some hiccups, so.
No, I'm talking about people who aren't on the committee who just want to watch the proceedings. They can't participate, they can just observe. It's like watching a mayor council meeting.
Technically, is that, how much of an issue is that?
We can do it. We've done it. But are you saying just for purposes of them listening, not participating in
correct.
The meeting?
Correct.
So participation needs to be in person.
Correct.
Zoom would just be listening. Yeah, we can.
Rick Hollander wants to say something.
I'm working with another association and setting up Zoom. Sometimes there's the connection problems from the other side, being able to get in. I tried doing my last IEI meeting Zoom and nobody could get in. Yet I was able to set it up and it was ready to go. But there can be connection issues. Mm-hmm. Those have to be worked out first before, when outside guests are trying to get in. But when members and stuff, they're usually able to access easier than outside guests. So that'll be something that has to be looked into if it's set up.
The City of Tucson regularly holds meetings open to the public where they can just listen and not comment. It's done all the time across different departments.
Yes, but if there is a hiccup in the system, then we get pushback from somebody that says, I wanted to listen, but I couldn't connect.
You're always going to have those challenges, but they do it transportation, PTSD, like Parks and Rec.
Right, but businesses they know where this meeting is. It's publicly posted. And if they feel it's that important, they can show up. My personal opinion.
I think mayor and council and other people at the city would disagree with you, but
that's fine.
It's your opinion.
if I could,
go ahead.
I wonder I think it's reasonable that you could broadcast a meeting in real time. If there's technical issues, there's technical issues, mm-hmm. but we try to do it.
Okay.
It's not guaranteed. Somebody really is important, they can show up in person, but they have the ability to see it in real time. I think that's pretty reasonable if it doesn't put an undue burden on the staff to set that up and make it work. Mm-hmm. I would be in favor of that, and I don't know if maybe your motion should be revised to say to include that it could have the meeting broadcast the normal matter that the city.
Do we know that the meetings are going to be in the same place every time?
Yes.
Okay.
So they're always going to be here?
They're always going to be here. If they're not here, then we'll be in our building.
Yeah, to clarify, Mr. Chairman, the meetings will be in one of two locations. Unfortunately, we cannot schedule more than 3 months in advance. Okay. So we can't schedule the entire year and reserve the room. So there's a 90% chance that they're always going to be in this room. If they're not here, they're going to be across the street.
Okay.
Okay, so as far as setting up for view only for general public, do we have the same capabilities in both locations?
Yes.
Okay. Rick, do you want to amend based on some thoughts? Or?
I'll amend my motion. So I move that we meet, that the committee members meet in person, but making the meeting available for the public. But if you want to participate, you have to show up in person.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Yes.
I think by doing that, my guess is that impacted stakeholders will be as apathetic in terms of participating via watching the broadcast as showing up. But at least if there is any subsequent concerns by impacted stakeholders, you will that you had the opportunity to be aware of what direction we were going because our deliberations were broadcast and you could have observed. So I do think there is sort of a CYA for committee members by allowing that option.
Well, and the other important part is we don't necessarily put something on the agenda and of significant impact that we deal with all in one meeting without giving people an opportunity to digest. So if they're viewing only the first time it comes up, then they're thinking, ooh, I better get down there for the next meeting, then at least they're aware of it.
Yeah, I think it's a protection for the committee members.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, I do have a question. I just remembered that we also seem to have the duty of being a Board of Appeals. Is that still the case moving forward? If that's true, would those meetings fall under the same motion, or are we only talking about the code adoption process?
Well, this committee handles both, so I believe the motion covers both actions of this committee.
So does that give any issues to people? Because, I mean, that results ultimately in legal action against people. Sort of.
I don't know that it's really any different personally. You know, it's
just asking.
Yeah, we do have two tasks that we do as a committee, but I think as long as we have availability for people to watch, but we make it clear that all participants have to be here in person. I think that's the important part.
I think that's the general rule, but we don't have very many appeal cases, but let's assume we have one and the person is out of state. Well, you can make special arrangements, I guess, for a Zoom meeting. Or as rare as that would come up.
If this is, for instance, somebody is out of state, you know, we can make special arrangements if that happens.
On a case by case.
Yeah. Okay. Further discussion? Vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And now we're on to the Ken Koppler meeting.
Sorry.
So we're on back to number two, Ken. So we're moved back to the 2021-2024 International Mechanical Code and Associated Amendments.
Can I point something out?
Yes, sir.
Since I got mine early. Remember how they used to mark on the margins how when the changes? They don't do that anymore. They have a QR code, which is a real pain in the butt. Because it's right here on chapter 403. Well, let me just give you the whole chapter, not line by line. So just be aware if you're looking.
So when you do the QR code, does it give you the bar? Or what,
no,
does, what does it give you?
It gives you that entire chapter with the
right
describing what changed.
Oh, okay.
It's a different.
Rick, if you go to the online one, they at least they put the new stuff in blue, which is better than nothing. But
but how many people have the online version of the code?
As far as I know, it's free. But
I would say most don't.
What
I do because I touch all the codes. Yeah, it's still mechanical.
But you just, oh, I can't, you just memorize it. Well, what I've done is I've gone through first the 21 code and Ruth took down all the stuff that's changed in the 21 code. Then I went to the 24 code and went through the same thing on them. So I've got at least a file that shows all the changes. The significant change, like, you know, which ASTM thing it is, or which ASME thing it is, blown off. But for the most part, I've got almost all the significant changes for both codes in all one document.
So I can share that. We've got a spreadsheet here in the documents that were sent that has that. Kind of pre-prepared it, or.
Yes, so this is Clayton. I did prepare the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet is intended to identify code sections that significantly changed. It does not identify section renumbering or slight modifications. In the mechanical code, for example, the word grease was added before the word duct in a lot of locations. Those are not located on the spreadsheet. To the point of the online subscription, when you access it through the digital premiums, it is a lot more clear as far as what's changed based on color coding and links. We were looking into potentially getting digital subscriptions for the committee members at least, but we've had some challenges purchasing subscriptions for non-municipal staff. So because your volunteers, our IT departments have deemed
our
it.
Our procurement makes it.
Right, has made that very difficult. So while we've attempted to try and get you digital access, it has not been successful.
Okay.
Well, this is Ken Coffin. The spreadsheets are helpful, so if you don't mind sharing that, that'd be very good.
I haven't finished the mechanical because those people went bananas on the refrigeration piping and things like that.
Yes, yeah. And I have not had a chance to really delve into both the IMC and IPC as far as the changes. I do know of some things I wanted to address, but for the most part, I think they're pretty minor compared to just going through and seeing what has changed and what hasn't. I mean, some of the big items that have changed on the mechanical is the ventilation tables now are trying to catch up with ASHRAE. And so a lot of those tables increase the outside air requirement for certain types of occupancies. And so that's going to be a big issue. Or big change, I should say. I didn't know how we want to go. How do we want to go through these then? Do we just want to kind of go through the amendments that were proposed, or do we want to? And then, like I said, I still need to go through. I'd still like the opportunity to go through the codes a little more thoroughly and just verify a few things.
I guess let's talk about the process,
yeah.
What we have, where we're headed, what our next steps are going to be regarding, at least for today, the three codes that are on our agenda. So, obviously we have the old amendments,
right.
And has staff gone through and proposed... I haven't seen the spreadsheet, so can you talk about what you've done so far?
There's a strikeout red mark for SEP, which I think took the 2018 amendment and is proposing what those amendments would be for 2024. They were distributed by Angie.
Right, so we have that.
So that's really what I've been looking at, but it's not my specialty, so I don't have any comments.
Go ahead.
This is Dan. What I did is I did a strikeout version with, if code sections change, I did a strikeout version, and if red, I put what the new section was, or if
So basically, you guys have worked with the old amendments and trying to update them with correct numbering, but actually have not addressed any code amendment changes.
There's, Mr. Chairman, this is Clayton with the city. There is one new amendment proposed in the plumbing code that has not previously been in the City of Tucson amendments. But the City of Tucson does have a strikeout version like Pima County with all of the code change numbers or number changes identified in red and slight language modifications identified. The one new amendment proposed by the City of Tucson for the plumbing code amendments is to address gender-neutral restrooms due to the increased number of appeals we've received to locate public lavatories outside of the water closet room. Several restaurants in town have moved towards a gender-neutral restroom configuration with individual user rooms and shared lavatories directly outside of those rooms, but it does not meet the specific letter of the code because the lavatory is required to be located inside the room where the water closet is. So in the strikeout version that's been distributed and posted to the City of Tucson's website, you'll see section 405.3.2 for public lavatories. Once again, that is section 405.3.2 is a new proposed amendment to alleviate the need for applicants to continue appealing this requirement. As stated, it says gender-neutral restroom configurations that consist of a continuous bank of single-user rooms may share lavatories provided the quantity of lavatories is not reduced and the lavatories are located directly outside the single-user rooms.
So, can I back up and look at the big picture here? We've got two issues, really. We've got one is the code changes from 18 to 24, which we generally accept, but I would like to know what they are before we move over to the amendments. I think it more makes more sense just to go over the revisions since 2018, make sure everybody's okay with the revisions before we move on to the amendments. That's what I would recommend.
Well, yeah, I think it, they go hand in hand because if you're looking at the code changes, you should obviously be looking at the amendments that plug in at the same time.
So, this is Ken Cawthorn again. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, so should I go through and just describe the changes and what has occurred and what the amendments are? Is that how we want to go through this? Or
yeah, I think the best thing, again, we rely on you heavily for the mechanical and plumbing stuff just because that's your expertise. So if you can get together a summary of the significant changes and how those impact the amendments. In other words, we may have amendments, additional amendments because of that, or we may have some amendments to drop off.
Right. And there's other issues that I guess I'm running into, similar to what the city has already put in there about the lavatories. About other, comments
appeals.
Yeah, when you want to make a code change or whatever, so that have occurred. For instance, I know we've got a pretty good description in there on what to do with grease interceptors. However, Pima County Wastewater does approve other types of grease interceptors now, and also there's the whole thing of, in the plumbing code, there's a section that says you're not allowed to terminate clear waste into the grease interceptor. So we've got condensate drains that we can't take to a floor sink in the kitchen because the code says you can't take it there. So we have to then put a separate floor sink right beside it that's for sewer, right beside the one for grease waste. And so those are kind of some code issues I'd like to address too. And I guess what I could do is maybe go through similar to what the city and county did in the amendments and just present those along with the changes. Is that
sure
appropriate? Okay.
Bob?
Well, I was going to say, the 2018 code actually had that same thing in it.
Right.
But generally what's happened is Pima County the Wastewater has put through their amendments, and they got rid of that part. They said, you've got to go, everything in the kitchen's got to go too.
Correct. And I guess I just want to go ahead and add that into these amendments, right?
Yeah, it should be included in 1003.
Right.
Just to take out that one section, which actually was in 1002, I think.
Right.
But I agree with you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, I think that would be the most helpful for all parties, is to understand, again, the changes and what that impacts the amendments that we have.
Yeah, and some of the changes, a lot of the changes are just for your information. So like I mentioned, that's what I just opened real quick, just to look. The codes are trying to catch up with some of the standards. So your outside air quantities are going to increase, things like that. That I think just as a general, we all need to know, just understand that's what's occurring.
Right.
But others I think we need to, maybe have amendments for, right?
Right. Okay.
So, and as I mentioned, I just haven't had a chance to go through the 24 code in detail.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and those of us, we're just now getting our books.
Right.
I'm sure that Jeff's going to want to go through some stuff pretty carefully.
Yeah, because I can help you work with that.
I think that'd be good.
Because I want to help you on the plumbing side.
Right, but as far as things that you've seen also.
Yeah.
Right. So just so that we could try to pick anything that's relevant. Right?
And it's good that we have both sides of that issue. We have the design side and the installation side of it. So
make it work side.
All right.
And it's a big issue. Mechanical is such a big part of what's going on.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, at this point, I don't know if it's worth going through the county and city amendments. I think the city amendments address more of the county amendments seem to just go through and renumber a lot of the things, but the city at least goes through, it looks like, and says that some of the amendments can be stricken out because they are addressed in the new codes.
Right.
So I think that's very helpful. Like I said, I just kind of want to go through the big section on the plumbing code amendments is the whole grease interceptor stuff. And I just like to go through and clarify some of that and try to make that simpler. Also, Clayton, you mentioned about the public lavatories and adding that. I do know there were some projects that we've done where we've had group toilet rooms with common lavatories. I don't know if that's a common thing these days to add that to the it, rather than just gender neutral, individual gender.
Well, like Brother John's, where they've got the two
large
ones with the sinks outside.
Right.
Yeah.
So to clarify, this is Clayton. The 24, actually it was the 21, I believe, addressed the differentiation between male and female restrooms that has been traditionally required. So the ICC has addressed gender-neutral restrooms in generality, but lavatories are still required inside those single-user rooms.
Oh, single-user.
So while the ICC has come to a place where you're not required to segregate all of your restrooms into men and women only, it still doesn't address the shared lavatory. So that's the City of Tucson amendment is specifically for shared lavatories that are in an open bank just outside of the single use or water closet room.
Okay, that makes sense. And the other thing that I noticed is in the city, they are now putting in the amendment for the lower flow fixtures. I wanted to approach the county with that too and just see, do we want to just make that similar? Because you already have the requirement for the waterless urinals, but the city kind of goes through, they do allow water urinals, but they also have flow restrictions on the other fixtures.
Yeah, I'm stuck. There was a 2007 resolution, Pima County approved resolution by the Board of Supervisors that required that waterless urinals,
okay,
for example. So I'm a little bit limited on those type changes because those have already been approved. But that, saying that, doesn't mean they can't be added to the city's amendment.
And that's I guess what I'm thinking is maybe we go through and add some of the other ones that are there as far as for the, the water closets, shower heads, lavatories,
sure,
things like that, just to be consistent.
Right. We do have the low flow faucets, for lack of better words. Some of that stuff's in there.
Okay.
In our amendments already.
Right.
Clayton?
And to clarify a little bit more for everyone else, including the City of Tucson recently adopted last year WaterSense required fixtures for low flow plumbing fixtures, and in tandem with that, a restriction on ornamental turf. The ornamental turf doesn't apply to our building regulations, but the WaterSense fixtures do. So in response to the local ordinance that was adopted within the last year, the City of Tucson plumbing code amendments now reflect the reduced maximum flow of plumbing fixtures. So to help clarify, I think what Ken was trying to say is, while the City of Tucson amendment showed those more restrictive water flow requirements, the county amendments might not.
True, and I did not get a chance to go through all the Clayton's, but the other thing we can do is, if we're reducing what the county is already requiring, we may be able to get that change. I mean, ideally the goal, like it's always been, is try to keep the county and the city's amendments as close as possible.
Sure, so, yeah, exactly.
Much appreciated by industry.
Yeah, and that's my thought too, is to incorporate some of those water sense fixtures basically into the county. All right, so I think the only one that I think we can all agree on is at this point, as far as moving forward though, it, just only because there's so much to both the mechanical and the plumbing code, would be the fire code. There's just not a whole lot. I mean, it's pretty descriptive. Not a whole lot has changed. There's only been minor things with it. And really we never had any amendments on either the city or the county with that. So that would be the...
Did you mean fire code or fuel gas?
Fuel gas.
Fuel gas. I'm sorry. The fuel gas code.
The fire code makes it easy for me.
Sorry, the fuel gas code.
Okay. So it seems like, now that we're all getting the books, we need to take some time. I mean, you've already been looking through some of the stuff, but the rest of the committee needs to take time to go through and do their comparisons, look at the amendments, look at the new books, understand, what the changes are, and then come back and have a more line-by-line summary and discussion, and know, it would be nice if we could, you know, get these three code amendments kind of behind us. Because we haven't even touched the building code yet, and that's a bigger issue.
Right. So the only thing I was going to mention is, yes, if you can share this.
I'll send it to you.
Oh, you did. Thank you. And then what I guess I could do is, prior to the next scheduled meeting, I can issue what I think are the just a brief description of some of the changes. I know that they're addressed here, but maybe I could just describe some of them. I'll just go through and just describe those, and also go through and note any additional items that I would like to address as far as amendments go.
Dan, did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to say, I do apologize for the code books. I've been having a hell of a time getting them from ICC. All the 2021s, they supposedly are supposed to be here this month. As soon as I get them, we'll get them to you. The IRC and IECC have not even been published yet. So, and then the IDCs were backward, but hopefully I will get those in the middle of this month. As soon as I get them, we'll let you guys know. And then, so we don't have to wait for the next code committee meeting. I'll try to make arrangements with all of you guys to get them.
Okay. You've got NECs coming also?
I will get the, I got a little bit of NEC.
What about having the fire code available to us as well? I got caught up in fire code amendments that affect electrical design and was unaware of them because we never had discussions of fire code. And there was significant amendments made by Tucson Fire in our fire alarm requirements. And even if maybe we could just be copied with the agenda and minutes of fire code meetings when they occur, that might be helpful to know what's going on in that, because those requirements should parallel, and for example, the fire alarm section of the IDC, which is section 907, is intended to parallel the similar section in the fire code. So there's amendments in the fire code, but we don't have amendments in the IBC. Perhaps all we need is a single amendment that just references the fact that there are amendments in the fire code. But I'm just wondering about
how we had this issue on the 18th. We had a meeting at the end, and the people reviewing the fire code made changes. So then we lost that parallel language between the building code and fire code.
Exactly.
And there was no coordination. So then the question is, which one do you go by, the fire code or the building code? Now, the fire department will say the fire code.
they don't sign off on this.
The whole point is they're supposed to parallel what's in the building code and fire code. Shouldn't be.
And the written code books parallel, but there ended up being a significant local amendment in the fire alarm portion. I don't know about other things, or maybe other things.
Right.
Well.
I mean, that to me, that's kind of a big issue. I mean, those two committees should get together and at least compromise on what the changes are so that they at least match between the building and fire code.
So can we be copied, Angie, on, can we get their information as they move forward and get copied as on our committee?
Yes, and I'm guessing it would be helpful for you guys to have a copy of their
current
amendments.
And truthfully, any proposed ones will come up during their meetings, so if we can at least be aware of what they are doing and what they're discussing, handouts that they might be having for their meetings, so we could look at them, and if, you know, if we need to attend their meeting, at least we're kind of pre-warned. Dan?
County obviously a little bit different, because
right.
20-some-plus fire districts, but I do attend a monthly fire marshal meeting, so I can also try to give any amendments that the other fire districts are proposing, if you would like.
Yeah, it would just be nice to be in the loop since there is the you know, parallel language and supposedly being consistent between the fire code and the building code amendments, it would be nice to just stay only one step behind them, not six.
Yeah, and that would also, they also have language in there that impacts the mechanical code, too.
Wow.
So if they have any amendments to some of those sections, we need to understand that also. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question is, how do those differences get resolved?
Well, they need to be brought to this committee, and if we need to amend our building codes to parallel the fire code, then it's something we should be doing.
Well, I guess the problem is, anytime you have these code requirements, there's always a trade-off of cost versus benefit, right? So the fire department clearly has a bias in one direction. There's nothing to balance it out. So what happens is, the fire code people say, here are amendments, tough. And then so we should just change the building code based on the fire code?
Well, we need to be aware of what they're doing to begin with. And number two, be proactive in their amendments if they have significant issues. Because, like everybody says, the fire code, the fire department's not going to sign off unless all of their requirements are met. So whether we adopt them or not, you're still stuck with them.
Yeah, but it, you know, like Dennis said and Ken said, it causes problems because these guys don't probably even own a fire code or rarely look at it. Because all their
stuff. Well, I do, but it's
only
after the amendment, you don't see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would like this committee to be a little more proactive. Get the information as far as what they are proposing and moving forward with.
And we could have a voice in the process, perhaps. I mean, I know the thing that affected me, which was fire alarm design in specific types of apartment buildings, it greatly increases the cost of the fire alarm system. And the whole thing happened because of high-rise student housing, which is built off campus of the university, but the University of Arizona approached the fire department and said, we want more fire alarm devices than code requires in these apartments, which are being built specifically for students. And so what ends up happening is amendment gets written addressing what the U of A asked for. And now it applies to any apartment building that's got an interior corridor that's being constructed with 16 or more units, which there's a lot of them being built that way now. And it is greatly increasing the cost of fire alarm systems. And essentially because the University of Arizona wanted it for student housing, because the University of Arizona, with their own internal requirements, goes far beyond what's in the published nationally recognized code books as asking for fire alarm systems. But that's now a requirement in the city of Tucson. Now, I don't have any expectation that the fire department's going to move backwards from where they are now and make that go away, but there could be something else like that that comes forward in the future. I believe that because it only went through the fire code side, there wasn't any awareness of it happening, and there was no pushback. And maybe if there had been some pushback, there at least could have been some discussion, and maybe it wouldn't have gotten mitigated and still would have stuck. I don't know, but there just wasn't any discussion at all.
Yeah, this is Fred. We've had these issues on all of our university projects, so what's happening at the university is they're taking on fire protection themselves. So we're not even designing the systems anymore. They're taking it on themselves. That being said, these private projects like you were talking about, those are in turmoil because the university wants more devices. They want, all their code amendments written into this, but that's what's happening right now on any university project proper. They're taking on all of the fire protection itself. Joe Braddon and his crew, they're doing all that work internally.
But what ended up happening is the university lobbied the fire code adoption and actually got the requirements that the University of Arizona wanted adopted into the fire code. So there's amendments in for all the any apartment building that has internal hallways, 16 or more units. Now all the smoke, you don't do smoke alarms anymore. You have to do smoke detectors because everything has to report on the fire alarm system. And so you've probably grown the fire alarm system, you know, by a factor of five or more because the University of Arizona wanted it, because that's how the University of Arizona would have put a fire alarm in their dorms if it was a university-owned dorm.
Yeah, this is frightening. And what's happening is a lot of those properties have university leases some of those square footages within those properties, like the hub and stuff. And so they're trying to implement or force their code on the whole building. And that's what's been happening on a lot of projects.
Well, they didn't force the code on the whole building. They forced the code on all
the entire city.
New construction, right. Private.
In the whole city.
In the whole city.
They own with that
everywhere.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It's adopted in the
right.
code.
That's, code that's what happened. Right. It wasn't that wasn't the initial thrust. But effectively, that's what they did, is they affected all.
They got a code amendment to the fire code, and we have to.
That affects all the city, correct.
And it's a big cost increase. And, you know, all I hear is cost of housing is increasing. Rents are going up. Everything's more expensive. And it's because of all these ideas. It would be, it's a great idea to do this. But I don't know that it has the research behind it that the actual published nationally recognized codes have saying what a minimum requirement is. I mean, everything we're doing here is considered minimum requirement for safety. Well, they're wanting a lot more than is a minimum requirement for safety based on the national codes.
Right. And owners can do more than is required by code.
Absolutely. You always can do more.
You can always do that.
But on that particular issue, everybody in, under the jurisdiction of Tucson Fire is required to do more. And that happened, and it happened in the process in another committee.
So I guess my question is, there's got to be a way to resolve this. To me, I mean, fire code, building code, they're equal. One's not superior to the other. And if we wait to the end till the amendment's been approved, then it's a done deal. There's got to be a way to liaison between the two committees to make sure when we get to the end, we're all on the same page.
Well, correct. And I think the first step is us being even aware of what they have and what they're doing. And for stakeholders, you know, stakeholders should be attending the meetings and having input, like Dennis is saying. You know, do they even know how much they've increased the cost of projects throughout the entire city?
I'm just curious, who participates in the fire code committee meeting? I would say that gets less public participation than the building code. Because I assume that the building code, people are thinking the building code includes the fire code since it's a family of codes.
Right.
Shaking her head, yeah. So, There's no oversight on the fire code committee.
Clayton? So, this is Clayton. I wouldn't necessarily agree that there's no oversight on the fire code committee, but it is disjointed from the Consolidated Building Code Committee, which, looking back towards 2010-2012, was one of the reasons why the mechanical, plumbing, building, and electrical code committees were consolidated into this new body. But there is, I would agree, there's still some disjointed communication between the Fire Code Committee and the Joint Code Committee. I would like to volunteer to be a liaison to some extent for bringing information to this committee based on what the Fire Code Committee has proposed for a schedule. I was just looking at their website. They don't have any information posted for when the next fire code committee meeting is to be held, but I can petition the fire department for information for their upcoming schedule, and also request that Fire Marshal Michael Ashford attend these meetings to help answer questions as it relates to what the Fire Code Committee is in process of doing. However, where it comes to advocating what the Fire Code Committee adopts, I would say that members of this committee or interested persons would have to actually attend the Fire Code Committee to make those advocations.
Right.
Yeah, okay. There has to be some kind of liaison during the process, because if you wait to the end, everybody's just going to dig in their heels and end up where we're at now.
Yep. So, yes, we'll gladly accept your volunteer missions. Okay.
And the Fire Code Committee, I assume, publishes their proposed amendments like the Building Code Committee?
In years past, they have. I just looked at the website, which the City of Tucson has a brand new website. I believe Haven County also has a new website. And so there's a lot of work that's still being done in the background getting the websites updated. But as it stands now, the Fire Code Committee does not have any information posted to the clerk's page for upcoming agendas, meeting schedules, or proposed amendments.
Well, I mean, I think it would be helpful if we were just put on the mailing list with the Fire Code Committee. And if they want, then we can share our agenda and our proposal with their committee. Now, when something comes up that affects Dennis, then he can go to the meeting and participate.
Yeah, I think communication is real simple if you just make that little tiny step to include people.
Yeah, just include this committee on the Fire Code, and then we'll include the Fire Code Committee on our agenda and amendments.
So who's going to take on that task of making sure that we get copied?
This is Clayton. I will take on the task of working towards coordinating the information sharing between the two committees.
Great.
But I don't want to step as far as saying I will be a representative of that Fire Code Committee, because I won't.
No.
I would leave that to the Fire Marshal.
Right.
Well, I think it'll be helpful if you get the agenda and the proposed amendments, then whoever it impacts on this committee, they can attend the meeting and make their case.
Right. Okay. Great.
And I can make an attempt to do that with fire districts, the ones that in the meetings, fire marshal meetings, City of Tucson's one, Golden Ranch, Northwest Fire, Green Mountain Fire, all those guys. Unfortunately, they're all on a different adoption cycles. You know, we got the state fire marshal. When they're going to be adopted. So I don't know how that affects the fire district.
My sense of all the fire districts is that it's Northwest and Golden Ranch are the most proactive. Their websites, you can download information about their codes and all that. Most of the others are a lot more low-key, tend to just go with the codes as published.
And I would agree with that, Davis.
The other two definitely have amendments that do a
And I will. Matter of fact, next Wednesday we have our first one of this year, Fire Marshal. So I will bring up this up.
Okay, so back to the agenda. So items 2 through 4, we will, move those on to the next meeting for more discussion and understanding of.
Sure. I mean, we could, if you want, we could. I have no issues with moving forward and closing out the fuel gas code, because I don't think I'll have any. I'm not aware of any issues or concerns people have or needing amendments on that.
Okay.
But the plumbing and mechanical, I think we need to go further into. Yeah.
Right. But I think just now that we have the books, understand, look through them, understand what's going on, get a good summary from you at the next meeting.
Yeah, so I can generate that, and I guess would I send that to you
Angie.
Then, and to
yeah.
then forward to everybody?
Yeah, okay. Please.
That's what I'll do.
Okay. So moving on back to number five, we did not actually talk about the schedule of meetings. So
we have a proposed yeah. schedule, right? So you can't book stuff over 3 months
Except
out.
Except Tuesday of every month.
Right.
Right. So if it worked today, is that working with everybody as far as we know? Okay. So I guess we should have a motion to accept that time slot.
Second well, Tuesday of every month, and everybody's okay with 9 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay, so somebody want to make a motion?
Looking at me.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
So moved.
All right. Okay.
I'll wait a second.
I'll second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have a time and we have a method. So, number six, membership updates.
Mr. Chair, this is Clayton. We have one committee member whose term is expiring in February, next month, and has decided not to renew. So we wanted to at least let you know that Dante or Angeli will not be moving forward on the code committee.
Okay.
And we have reached out to Saba for potential nomination of a new member.
Okay, great.
We will keep the board updated as that develops. They have a few ideas in mind, but no official nominations that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard a rumor within, so and I would approve the gentleman. He's been in the industry a long time.
Okay, good. Yeah. Audience, call the audience. There anybody need to bring anything up?
I just have a question that is more of a rumor. So,
well, we love those.
I heard that for municipalities that had received federal funding or federal grants in recent years that they were going to be restricted as to whether they modified the building, were able to modify the building codes locally. That there was some relationship between the two, so that if specifically if a municipality had received, let's say in green building or sustainability or climate action, which we know the city has been a leader in, that they would not be able to locally modify the codes that were related to changes in the building code related to that. Is that
specifically the energy codes?
Yeah. So I don't know whether that is true or whether that has come up in this committee or what its status is, but it is something that the industry, I serve on the SAVA board, and we did get a text from David that he's sorry there was a whole bunch of things that happened so that they couldn't be here today. But it is a question that private development and redevelopment community has been circulating.
Yeah, please. So this is Clayton. In response to that, I can say that the city is part of a greater coalition that includes a lot of municipalities and private industry representatives through the entire state of Arizona and New Mexico. It's called the RECI grant, R-E-C-I. And it is a proposal to increase awareness and potentially create a standalone Southwest regionally dedicated standard. The details on what the code, the Southwest code, as it is being referred to, is still very, very wide open because industry professionals such as the U of A, ASU, and a number of other partners that have been included in that grant funding to help develop information associated with what that code might include hasn't even begun yet. So the city of Tucson is still looking to adopt the 2024 International Energy Conservation Code in addition to the rest of the I-Code suite. The development of a regionally specific energy code is not in replacement of the IECC. It would be supplementary to. So codes referred to as a stretch code are codes above and beyond the minimum standards for green certifications such as LEED, Green Globes, NAHB standards, things of that nature where they're above code programs that would qualify for a certificate, certifying the building as green or sustainable, as it were. Cities such as Scottsdale have adopted the International Green Code, IGCC.
Yeah, green Building Code.
Which, again, was originally a stretch code intended to be above the minimum, but now cities like Scottsdale are pushing that bar. And there is nationwide movement towards identifying what net zero means. In fact, there is a new grant that has been opened just recently to help define the term net zero because there's a lot of discussion as far as what net zero really means as related to offsets, off-site offsets that would help reduce a company's carbon footprint at a specific location. So they're working to help identify that with the intent to continue moving towards carbon neutral buildings in the future. But the IECC, the International Energy Conservation Code, has traditionally moved in a stepwise fashion towards that goal anyway. So as it relates to what I heard the question, would local amendments be restrictive if the city has received federal funding or grant funding? The only restrictions that I'm aware of directly associated with the RECI grant is code training specifically for the 21 IECC. Because the 21 has already been released, the grant couldn't include information about the 24. So the grant program funding will include specific training for the 2021 IECC to meet those grant criteria. The city's team, in collaboration with the coalition, is therefore planning both 2021 IECC training and 24 IECC training for the industry, for the public, for the general population to help people understand what the changes mean. There are some proposals for the private education industry, academia, to help produce educational materials that identify the differences between the current energy code and the proposed adopted codes and the potential cost impact. But the scoping analysis of that research still is being developed. So we can't say what the extent of that information would be at this time, but they're looking at helping to raise awareness and education associated with the continued adoption towards more carbon neutral buildings.
Is there a time frame on the RECI grant?
The RECI grant will end 2025, I believe. I have to look. It's a 4-year grant, but there are different milestones associated with what needs to be accomplished at different times. the project management plan for the grant still hasn't been released yet. It's still being developed by the coalition.
And my only other comment, which is somewhat related, is that in looking at housing affordability, NAHB, I think in 2022 or early 2023, released a white paper or a research report that indicated that regulations, compliance with regulations, were responsible for 40% of the costs of multifamily housing. It was not a single family housing study. That one they haven't updated in some time, but there was a 22 or 23 study from NAHB that did an analysis of regulatory costs associated with multifamily housing and the impact on affordability. I haven't read it, but I did receive the link to it, so I don't know if there's anything in there that might be applicable to, you know, what this committee might want to consider as it looks at some of the changes.
This is Clayton again. If you could forward me those links, not only to the NAHB study, but also any information that you have related to legislation restrictions to local adoptions, as that becomes available, please forward that to me. I'd be happy to read that over, look into it deeper, and distribute to the board.
So, and this is Ken. I've also seen much of the funding for multi-housing, multifamily housing, it has to incorporate additional energy code items, and that is true. So they go above what's in the current 18 IECC, and have to be. They try to follow more of the Energy Star ratings and that, which I think is more similar to what I understand is in the 24 IECC. So I'm aware of that.
Okay. Any other items for discussion today? If not, motion for adjournment.
I move to adjourn.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Quick on that one.
Okay, so the 2nd February and...
2nd February 13th?
February 13th at...
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. And here, unless noted otherwise. You'll let us know.
Would it be safe to say if you can't make it, let me know? Just so that we can figure out for them. Thank you.
Thank you.